Thanks, Mike, and thanks for the other presenters in this session and other sessions. Larry Larson's a good friend and colleague. I used to complain about the ESA not being applied enough, and he would say, come back and lead by example, saying it's your society, just get out there and make it more applied. So, again, appreciate everyone's efforts to make the ESA what it is. This morning, in a short 20 minutes, I'm going to attempt to give you a short history of insect-resistant traits that have been commercialized. A very, very high level of insect-resistant trait discovery and development. And during that, some comments about the limitations that I see going forward that we have today. And then this is leading to some new developments that we're now beginning to occur, which is stacking multiple insect traits together. And we've been hearing pros and cons of that, so I'd like to share the author's view of this. You probably may have another list of pros and cons. This is not meant to be all-inclusive, but maybe just to get you thinking about the pros and cons of stacking multiple insect traits. And then we'll give you our view of what's best at the end from our perspective. Since 1995, it's not that long ago, only 12 years ago, we had the first insect-resistant trait expressed in plants produced. That was the event 176 from Mycogen and SIBA, and that was Cry1AB. And then the same year, you see the new leaf potato from Monsanto came out. So it's really a very short history and of insect control out there today. In 96, you see Bolgard, then Yilgard coming out there. You'll see a few others that aren't around today. I'll go ahead and jump to the next slide here, which has these that are still standing. Most of them have been outdated by new improved traits that do the same spectrum. So there were one or two that ran into other regulatory hurdles, but for the most part, there's been a slight elevation or evolution to new improved traits. So today we have, again, 10 individual registrations that have made it to traits in the last 12 years. So it's been an area that people have been moving towards as fast as they can, and it is amazing technology that brings tremendous value. The farmer loves to plant his seed in the ground and know it's going to be have insect protection and throughout the year. So you see Bolgard, Yilgard, AgriSure in 96. Herculex 1 in 01, and then in 2002, the first breeding stack came out. So this was Bolgard 2 with a single registration using an existing trait, the original Bolgard from 96, but with a new gene, Cry2AB, but it's a single registration. So that was the first registration of a stack trait anywhere in the world was Bolgard 2. Then through the years, you see some rootworm traits being introduced. The second dual gene product was wide striking cotton. The individual traits on different genes or constructs, but the registration was a single registration. Cry3435 is a binary toxin. This was in a single construct. So two genes are expressed there, two different proteins, but in a single construct. And that is a trend that we're seeing molecular stacks going forward. And then you'll see some of the newer ones. The Yilgard VT rootworm there, that's a new improved Cry3BB. It's a different event that does express a little bit better, but it also had the Roundup Ready in the same construct. And I'll talk about why that has some pros going forward. And there was another rootworm trait last year. So if you look at our current stack traits today in the market, we have five stack traits out there today. I mentioned Bolgard 2. Yilgard Plus is a breeding stack that Monsanto offers with a LEP plus rootworm. Two different constructs that have to be put together via breeding. Wide Strike is also a breeding stack. Herculex Extra is another breeding, it's a combination of a breeding stack as well as a molecular stack, and then the molecular stack of Yilgard VT Triple. Well, this is a very high level overview of the R&D path for these insect traits. Again, this is fairly new, this mouse to work here, very new program for us. But you'll see here biology, the gene ID, this actually starts many years before this. You don't just start year one say, well, what gene do I want to put together? So you have a long-standing program of biology or trait discovery, but you got to identify your specific genes, look at the expression, validate the efficacy, and then spectrum of the products. Typically, this is done in a model system to start with. It could be a model plant like Arabidopsis that you're working with, or it could be a model construct. You get a construct that's kind of a workhorse, you know that works, it's got a standard promoter, standard terminator. You stick in a single gene, you use that to test. But then when you want to move to the final product, you change the promoters, you change the terminators, and perhaps you add additional genes to make a molecular stack. You then have to transform the crop of interest. You have to identify the TO event, they call it, and with validated phenotypes. Typically, you would start with multiple constructs, multiple promoters, multiple terminators to see which one is actually going to work. We're getting much better with the transformation and the specific directed inserts with new technology, but there's still a little trial and error to bring this forward. So you could bring multiple constructs and probably create several hundred events of each construct. So you're starting with several thousand events and then doing a screening to make sure you find one that expresses and doesn't mess up the phenotype that you're looking for. And then integration, the breeding program is very long. Got to characterize the activity in the new hybrids, even though it worked in your prototype workhorse. You got to go back and test it over and over again in different hybrids or germplasms. And you may take two or three events out to the field from that long event selection process, field trials, commercial events. Safety assessments, mammalian environmental would start back here throughout the process, get much heavier when you got the final event, and then finally regulatory approval. Anyway, it's a long process. We thought early on you could do this very quickly. It's at least 6 years. It's more like 10 years. For a new individual trait, the ballpark number is at least 100 million plus. Even a breeding stack's about 30 million plus when you look at global registration. So it's a very expensive process, a very long process. So we're going to be determined to get the maximum value. We have to stay in business. This is not computing on all these traits. Some of those earlier are not going to pay off, and the accountants are figuring that out. So we've got to make these things bring value to the farmer going forward. All right, I'll give you a quick overview of my kind of the top six reasons not to stack, and there are many reasons not to stack, probably in addition to this, so your list may be different. But this is one that's obvious. Prophylactic treatments can result in selection for insect resistance, whether crop protection is needed or not. So if you've got a sub-economic level insect infestation out there and you're applying a control measure, you're selecting when you don't really need to. So that is a true statement. With any kind of prophylactic treatment, including a trait or a seed treatment. One advantage with traits, though, is they're typically very high dose and there's no survivors. The selection is occurring very slow rate. Seed-delivered solutions require grower investment if needed or not, and that is true. They have to make a decision on the very front end whether they want that technology, and so they need to be very careful about where they're placing it. You don't want to place these traits where you don't need the technology. You need to make a decision based on the projected occurrence of insect infestation. So there will be some times when this is not really needed to use these, and that decision needs to be made. Yield drag. This is, you talk about stacking multiple traits. The plant's making these BT proteins. It's not making starch or oils or other things. Is this gonna create yield drag? And it can at times, but we do address this very closely with that event selection process I mentioned earlier. So when you do your event selection, you're looking to make sure that you're not affecting the yield potential. That's one of the first things you look at, and it can occur if they're doing this. And we have many examples of events that produce lots of protein, but the phenotype of the plant is disturbed. This is kind of a subtle one, but it can encourage reduced mid to late season IPM decisions and crop diversification. If a farmer's got a tool that's working super for him, he doesn't have to fool with it, there's going to be a tendency to go wall to wall with it and not bring that crop consultant out back mid-season. Well, this is something the crop consultant's going to have to convince a farmer that these things are not bulletproof. You still need to scout them and look for late season adjustments. So we still need to do this. It's going to be something to push back on, both the diversification and the late season scouting. They are still needed. It is a challenge to the breeding and integration. If you've got multiple traits, it's going to be hard to put these in different versions and different germplasm. And this is kind of from our perspective, but it's getting tougher and tougher to put multiple things in plants from a breeding standpoint. And particularly the inventory challenges. If you've got a herbicide trait, insect trait one, insect trait two, and you've got to keep all the combinations, it's a nightmare for the seed company to produce these and have an inventory on hand when the farmer needs it. All right, switching to reasons to stack. Well, if you've got multiple stacks, multiple traits against different insects, obviously you should have improved spectrum and efficacy. Here's one of the driving reasons that we want to do it from an IRM standpoint. But stacks of different modes of action against single target pests results in redundant killing and very low odds of survival to both. So this should increase the durability of a trait. We came out with single traits against single insects. If we can put multiple ones against the same insect, it should improve the durability of the product. And I have one slide to illustrate that later. slightly different is if you've even got similar modes of action, but if you've got two constructs or genes in there against the same insect, but even with a similar mode of action, you're going to actually have a much higher dose, a more dependable dose, because sometimes these things go up and down in their expression. If you've got multiple redundant genes making the same one, it will reduce the chance of resistance developing, make it a little more bulletproof. There may be the potential to simplify integration and inventory challenges if fewer combinations or versions are needed. If you decide, let's say we want a herbicide tolerant trait in everything, and you put that in everything to start with, there is an opportunity to reduce the number of offerings you're bringing forward. Or if you can really smart, you can plan that construct on the front end, and you can have multiple genes in the same construct and simplify the breeding process rather than the breeder having to put three or four genes in the same plant. It can simplify the management decisions for a farmer. If he, rather than a weekly decision, do we spray for this insect this week, week in, week out? If you've got the trait expressed in the plant, particularly a stack trait, it can actually simplify the decision making for the consultant. There's still decisions to be made, but it can simplify. And probably one of the more driving reasons we see it is this still may be the best chance to deal with a wide range of challenges to a crop and to maximize both yield and quality. We're seeing consistently improved yields with these traits. If you look at the corn hybrid testing coming out of the universities, this system, the ones on the very, very top are those with the multiple stack traits. So they are paying off. They're addressing multiple things at the sub-economic level that is delivering yield to the farmer. And we're also improving the quality from a disease standpoint. Well, here's a quick illustration of the durability. Yeah, this is if you take the same assumptions, you look at a single gene system over an artificial period of time, it will take this long to develop resistance, say a number of 25 here. If you take the same assumptions, but you put different modes of action on a two gene system running through the same model, it is a much, much longer period of time. So this is not going to be just a 2x increase in durability. It's going to be a multiple factor increase in durability for these products. And this potentially could help us be a little less conservative in some of our IRM tactics. What do the pros outweigh the cons? Well, we'll see here. It will still depend. I think it's going to depend on the individual situation. So you still got to look at each field and see what's good for that particular farmer. IPM specialists and crop consultants, we're not killing IPM with these stack traits. They're still going to be needed. In fact, I think more than ever, you've got to now have more choices, more opportunities to control insects and provide solutions. So we're actually making the system a little more complicated. So the consultants are still going to be needed, and they're still going to need to encourage crop diversification and mid and late season scouting, because things can come through these treatments that do need treated. And it's not going to be just maximum yield. I can almost guarantee you it's going to be a stack trait in corn that's going to give you the maximum yield, but is that the most profitable for that particular farm? I don't know. You need to look at the situation, what his yield potential is from the land quality standpoint, and look at sustained productivity and maximum profitability, not just maximum yield. So it's really going to depend on the individual situation, but I think in many cases, stack traits will have a pretty big place. Well, talking about new developments, we were fortunate to in October to announce some new stack traits with between Dow AgroSciences and Monsanto. Didn't know if this was going to happen or not for this particular talk, but this did come through. And this is a little more commercial I'd like to use here, but it's the one that was approved on our website that I could use. But we've come out with a smart stack combination. This will be the first ever 8-gene platform for corn. It will have the YieldGuard VT triple product, which is their second generation MON 88017 corn rootworm construct. That construct also has Roundup Ready 2 in it, so it's bringing both Roundup Ready as well as there's a new improved rootworm trait. And then it will also have YieldGuard VT Pro. This is not registered yet. It should hopefully be registered by next summer to meet our timeline. It's their new MON 89. It's a new two-gene foliar BT that will control second-generation YieldGuard corn borer as well as a broader spectrum of pests than their original MON 810. That will be paired with Herculex 1, our TC1507, our Herculex rootworm, which is a two-gene concept, and there's actually multiple Liberty links here. So there's 8+ genes and this smart stacks that we're bringing forward. If we get full registration trials have been ongoing for a couple years, and we hope to have registration in 2010, but that's still pending lots of approvals. Well, this can, we hope, raise the potential grain quality in the whole farm. There is a dual effective dose here. We've got multiple genes against similar insects, so this should increase the durability, the concerns about IRM, likelihood of resistance, multiple modes of action, and also expand the spectrum and the efficacy. And in the past, it was pretty easy to convince a farmer to put his refuge out there and not worry about his 20% reduction in yield. But with $4 corn prices, it's becoming harder and harder to get growers to comply with IRM. And they're also being pressed to be, on a global level, to be the most competitive farmers in the world. So this will help them reach a couple of those goals. So if you look at the primary pest here, you can see that there's basically double overlap. The Herclex products as well as the YieldGuard products control all these insects. So we've got redundant killing against all the primary pests here. And when you look at the secondary pests, the Herc products bring western bean black cutworm, and the YieldGuard is bringing much greater corn earworm than Herculex, which has suppression of earworm. So we're expanding the spectrum and doing redundant killing. And in conclusion, so we've got multiple successful introduction of traits since a very short period of historic time, and globally they're taking off as fast as we can ramp these up because they are bringing value. And stacking above and below ground traits is bringing tremendous value to corn and other crops. This is probably going to follow suit. And you could, so hopefully I've convinced you that there's greater durability and yield potential with these products. But the decision to use either single or stacked or no trait will still be a field-by-field decision and will be one tool to increase agricultural productivity, we hope. That's it, Mike. I don't know if there's time for questions or not.
Okay, you've got 3.5 minutes for questions.
Okay. Yes, Keith. Good to see you here. All right, the question from our forward, Keith Dorsner, is do we ever see the potential for using these, I guess, general transgenic technology as well as stack technology in specialty crops? And I think eventually, yes, we'll get there, but today with our regulations, and we've seen they add new regulations each year, the cost for specialty crops is really above what the model to bring those forward is. We do know in India and places they are going forward with eggplants and other crops, and I think that will kind of break some barriers. But there's going to have to be some kind of coalition like IRF to help lower the cost, because it's a $100 million journey whether you're doing it for eggplants or corn here in the U.S. And a lot of those safety concerns do need to be tested out. They're very, very long shots, but we have to test those out.